Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to talk about cars, and you're welcome to talk about your car. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And your make and model, and what kind of problems are you having? Describe the symptoms. We're going to ask questions, and we is going to be Alan, my son, and Andy, my daughter. They've been in the business for 20 years. Andy takes care of the money, and Alan takes care of the staff. The two of them kind of work it out together, right?
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to put your mic right there.
Okay.
Okay. And then that shows your voice a little bit better. Anyway, it's been interesting as I as you both know, I get a lot of trade magazines and talking about cars and new cars and stuff. One of the things is they talk about the newer cars have huge spaced out service intervals.
Mm-hmm.
So some oil changes that they're 10 and 15,000 miles apart. But what I find interesting is so much of the discussion talks about selling. And when the car comes in, this is what you do. And I'm thinking that in reality, there's a lot of cars. We used to do things at 30 and 60 and 90 all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And those were liquids. We did lots of fluids. And we don't do those now. But we still have the tire rotation, and we still have to check the brakes. Mm-hmm. We still have the flushing of the cooling system. There's a lot of stuff that we still have to do. Are you finding lots of stuff that needs to be done? Or is it on a scale of 1 to 10, is half the cars have something that needs to be done? A third of the cars don't have anything? I mean, are we seeing those kinds of things, or are we not?
I would say it depends on the mileage. I mean, pretty much you can bet your bottom dollar that anything prior to 50 is not going to need anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
50,000
miles.
50,000
miles. And 60 is going to be minor still.
Yeah.
Minor, I mean, even services, 60, 70, 80.
Yeah, I would say even 50 to 100 is not going to be an exponential amount of work. It just, like you said, spaced out intervals, better fluids, seem to be better belts and hoses, you know, better rubber components and stuff like that. But, yeah, 100 plus is where it really starts to get hairy.
And I'm glad you both brought that up, because we used to do lots of stuff at 30, 60, 90.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most everything is closer to that 100K mm-hmm. mark.
Yeah.
And it's really a 100K mark. It's not necessarily 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, because if someone drives 10,000 miles a year, they're 10 years away from 100K. And so it really, we're seeing, and I'm seeing, and you guys look at owner's manuals a lot, we're really focusing on mileage as opposed to time. And we don't really – how many cars do we have that come in for 3,000 miles once a year?
Oh, a fair amount.
Well, in the Ahwatukee Mountain Park Ranch area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's – and I think a lot more with just what's going on. A lot less – you know, people are driving a lot less. So you're seeing more now oil changes and stuff that you might be doing based off of time, not necessarily mileage, as opposed to – it used to be, you know, they might not, they were driving a lot more before.
Okay. Do you have customers that come in that ask for a service that you know is needed or not needed? Two-sided question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Give me an example.
We had a lady come in the other day that, I don't know, it had been a year and a half to do an oil change, and she said she needed an oil change, and she had like 230 miles on the car.
Yeah.
So no matter what oil she had, it was fine.
Yeah, like 230. I have more than that on my bike.
No, yeah,
not
right.
No,
yeah.
Not really.
No, we don't believe that.
Not really. You know what, though? In fairness, it is good to check because, you know, a lot of my customers, we see a lot of Jeeps and stuff, and those things burn through differential fluid pretty good.
Why? You said it, but why?
Well, because they use it. They use it off-road. They use it at slow speeds. They use it under demanding conditions, if you will. Moisture sometimes. They'll be, you know.
Moisture means they've been in water.
Yeah. 2 feet going through a river or something like that, and it fills up the pumpkin with water, something like that. But yeah, it's still good to check because we do see it occasionally where, or, you know, the other thing too is it's good to get ahead of it. It's good to still check it in case you do have something wrong. You know, all of a sudden you have that off chance that you have a tranny. I mean, we've seen some really early trannies lately that, you know, maybe had they been checked earlier, You know, we could have gotten ahead of it.
Early trannies. Described early trannies.
Less than 80K.
Okay.
Less than 80,000 miles where a tranny goes bad.
Okay. And so let me shoot that at both of you. What's the average life of a transmission we see before we start messing with it? Give me a range.
Name the product.
Wait, and what do you mean start messing with it?
When we start having to deal with slipping or a leak, a bad leak or whatever, major service, whether...
I mean, that really comes down to the product. We did a van the other day, a 450 van. It had like 63,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. And it was a
450, that's a Ford.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
No,
tell me, what
you was got, it an E?
Yeah, it was an E450.
Yeah,
gas motor.
Yeah,
E450 van.
Okay.
With like 63,000, it had burned through the tranny. It's way overloaded and had a tiny engine in it, and employees are driving it.
Okay, good. So there's a cause and an effect, yep. and
when I talked to our transmission guy, he had said this was like the third lowest. I mean, there was a couple sub 50,000 mile.
So what's the average time? What's the average mile that we do transmissions on?
I would say 100 to 150 probably.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the line with respect to the make, model, or the year of the car? Are we talking for the last 10 years, from 2010 upwards, we're seeing trannies going 100, 150,000 miles?
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Some of the we're seeing a lot of failures now with the CVT stuff.
Yeah.
And that's all sub 100.
Okay, you have to describe CVT, constant velocity transmission, in.
In Nissan's, Toyota?
Yeah. They're in quite a few things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just, you can't rebuild them. They, you know.
Well, I'm sure someone does. Yeah. None of our people rebuild them.
Yeah, the cost to, for local shops, I should say, the cost to rebuild them, they say, is greater than just buying a whole new one.
It's in a box. You buy the whole transmission in a box.
Yeah, so obviously, someone's rebuilding them. But.
And CVT is constant velocity transmission, constant velocity torque, but it's kind of a one-speed transmission.
Yeah, it doesn't shift. Yeah.
So it just goes, there's none of that, there's none of that stuff.
Mm-mm.
So, but that doesn't represent even 1% of the cars out there, 2% of the cars, 5% of the cars.
Mm-hmm. It's starting to get a lot more common. Yeah. I mean, I think, three in the last 2 months, maybe.
Okay.
Of the general cars, probably not. But of the transmission problems we're seeing, that number's a lot bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. 10 to 20%, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then tell me, air conditioning, major, because this is what I hear on, this is the emails I get. My car's approaching 80,000 miles, and I've been told I'm going to need a transmission, I need air conditioning overhaul, I'm going to need a complete cooling system replacement and all that kind of stuff. So
I need a new shop.
That's the first thing you need.
Say that again.
I said you need a new shop.
I have not heard that before.
That's the first thing you need.
Yeah,
no, that's true. I tell my customers, with few exceptions on preventative maintenance stuff, you fix stuff as it comes.
Yeah.
Especially like 6-liter Fords, just those problematic Fords. People say, I'm so scared of you. No. You're gonna have plenty of repairs. We're gonna become very good friends. Just let's fix it as it comes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Fix it as it comes. People say, I don't want my AC to go out, so I'm gonna replace the whole system. That's crazy.
Right.
I mean, preventative maintenance is real. I mean, obviously to do that and transmission services and things like that, but just to do it because you're worried about when it's going to happen is crazy.
And I get so much of that on the email side that I've been told this and I'm scared of this and I'm going to, and all right. So this is my famous line. The only motors we replace are ones that have been overheated a lot or run low on oil. Rarely do we just replace one that's just tired and dead. And if they are, name the mileage for me. Approximate. Alan?
Oh, I would say 300 plus.
And?
Yeah.
And I would,
and they're
too.
Mostly diesels, and they're mostly people who, use them, probably abuse them, and just know it's just not worth fixing. And like I've told you guys a million times, most of my customers say it costs more, no matter what it costs in your shop, it costs more in the shop than how does that saying go?
It costs more in
downtime than it does in your shop.
Yeah.
Just get it, I need it reliable.
Okay.
And I need it, to do work to make money.
Right.
And that's another thing when you start looking at, 100,000 miles, like my truck's at 120 right now, and I think you just did the 100,000 mile service the last time I was in, or mm-hmm. whatever. But that seems to be the new marker. We're not doing 30s, 60s, and 90s anywhere. We're really kind of hopscotching, and I'm trying to talk generically across the board on all the cars. 100,000 miles is we got to prepare for the next 100. So belts and hoses and fluids and filters and all the stuff that mm-hmm. you need. But we don't. Tell me how many times you guys have replaced a air conditioning system in a car that was working properly because they were scared it was going to break.
I've not done one.
Yeah.
We just don't do it.
No.
No.
Because the worst case scenario is you don't have any air, roll down your window and drive home. Who cares?
Yeah.
Unless, of course, there's some major health problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we got a caller. Gil, who might that be?
Would be Joe.
Joe, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, good. Thank you.
Good. I got a 2019 Silverado. It's the 4.3 V6 Ecotec, and about 44,000 miles on it. And just recently, when I go to start it, I've been hearing just enough of a little squeak, just enough to hear it. Sounds like there might be some metal on metal. It starts right up with no problem, no other issues.
When is this? When the noise you hear, is it during the cranking process or when the engine starts up?
I would say, okay, I go and turn the key, and then I hear it as the engine is starting up.
Any idea? It wouldn't be a fan belt. Because we don't have enough speed on the fan belts for cranking speed to have that.
I mean, really, the only thing it could be is maybe a starter, maybe.
But that's not a typical let's replace the starter symptom.
No, for sure.
We're a long way away from that.
Have you tried it, like, just... For example, have you tried it maybe with the AC off?
No, I haven't.
You know, with a little less load on that belt?
Hey, you're right. I think you're on the track right there.
Okay. I wasn't planning on changing any belts to 100,000.
No, what we're saying is when you sit, if you leave the AC on at night, when you shut the car off, the AC is on. When you hit the starter, the starter disengages everything on the motor. Otherwise, the computer doesn't let anything go. That radio doesn't play when you're cranking it over. But when you let go of the key because the engine starts, it turns the air conditioning back on immediately. And we're wondering if that's the noise you're hearing.
Okay. So, is that a problem?
No, because all that's happening is as soon as the engine starts, the air conditioning clutch, which is electric, clutch applies the compressor, and the compressor, there's going to be a little bit of a squeal till we get the compressor moving.
I would say the only time it's going to be a problem is if it becomes more prevalent, you know, starts happening every single time for longer periods of time, or if it gets louder.
Right, okay.
But if you just shut the air off before that night, and it doesn't happen the next morning or the next morning or the next morning, then we've got it nailed. You're applying the clutch immediately after the engine starts, and that's the noise you're hearing.
I see. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open. Gil answers the phone, and he'll ask you your name, and he'll put you in queue, and then he'll whisper in my ear, Mark, we've got Fred or Joe or John or whoever. So that's 602-508-0960.
He says 95% of the time it's those sensors in the front wheel hub. So didn't know if you guys had heard of that or run into that.
We see a lot of ABS issues on those older 25. Now, did you just do the sensor or did you do the whole hub?
I did the whole hub.
So you've done both front hubs?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so both front hubs are good. My guess is probably something with the ABS module. We see a lot of ABS modules go bad on those things. There's not a ton in that. Do you know what the code is by chance?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. If you've done both hubs, and which obviously comes with the ABS wiring, and all the ABS wiring is in good shape, it's going to be something electronic, probably... probably under the hood, and you're probably going to need some more equipment than you currently have to diagnose that.
Well, let me ask you a question. We've got scanners that we can plug into that, and we can go drive it and watch the ABS sensors. We can watch the speed sensors. We can watch the performance of each sensor, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so when we drive that, I know that last time I went and drove one with, well, I think it was with Ron, we did tight circles in the parking lot, left circles, right circles. We went fast and slow. We made 90-degree turns. We made 180-degree turns. And we could actually watch that one sensor fall out.
Yeah.
Where we lost the speed signal from the sensor. When you get the ABS light, is there going to be a code that pinpoint the corner, or does it just say ABS?
If it is a corner issue, then yes, it will
say left front, right front.
It'll say right front, vehicle speed sensor, okay. Erratic, or it'll say, you know, something to that effect.
Now, he's got just one in the back end of that, right?
Yeah, could be something in the rear. Well, if it's pulling, it's probably not something in the rear. But, yeah, he's got one in the rear as well.
Yeah, but it has to be something in the front because he said the pull. That was the key
yep.
thing that they said.
Yeah.
Did that make sense to you?
Yeah, it did, and on the 2003, they only have the sensors in the front. They don't have any in the rear
all. Okay,
so
okay.
Just stymied me.
And okay. You know, the other thing you could have, too, is you could have something like a caliper hanging up where, you know, that one, that could get your pull. You know, you got a right front caliper hanging up, and it's pulling to the right, but it's also allowing that speed sensor to read differently than the left front speed sensor, and it's seeing a differential. It's seeing a differential between the two. You know, the left might say 60, and the right might say 55.
And then I want to throw in too that you'll know that the caliper's hanging up because the pads are worn unevenly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the the inside,
the evidence of it.
Yeah, the evidence of it. Inboard mm-hmm. pad means the caliper's hanging up. The outboard pad means the hardware's hanging up. So the accelerated pad wear outboard, put a new hardware kit on both sides. On the inboard side, you're going to replace, and it's always a good idea, based on your 185,000, I'd put a pair of calipers on the front of it if I was going to do it at all.
Yeah, but this is, honestly, this is a really easy fix with the proper tools. I mean, that's something we can knock out in.
Put a dollar sign to the fix between what and what?
Oh, well, diagnosis would be, you know, probably 149. But then, like I said, it's hard to say. I mean, that ABS module could be real expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, but just the diag, probably somewhere between what, 125, 150?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And we're speaking, and generally when we give prices, we're trying to bracket the industry the best we can. There's going to be guys that are a little less than that. There's going to be some guys that are, like dealers, that are going to be more than that. But our bracket just seems to be something we're comfortable with. Okay?
Nope, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we got another caller. Who might that be?
And we have Tony.
Tony, good morning.
Hey there. Good morning, Mark. Another air conditioning issue question.
Sure.
And it has to do with a 1997 Ford Explorer. It's got the 4.0 liter, and it's not AC problems under the hood. It's right there at the dash inside the cab when the selector switch, it only runs on AC where it blows cold air on max. Once I click it down to the regular AC, it starts blowing hot air. You know, I'm not changing the temperature gauge or nothing, or the temperature selector or nothing. And then when I try turning it off on the same selector switch, when I hit the off, it starts blowing hot air down around my feet and up there in the defroster. Hmm. So I'm wondering what can be done, you know, to try and, you know, correct that selector switch.
It's likely going to be the blower motor resistor.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, it probably burned up and shorted some of those wires in that connector. Pretty common issue, especially when it only happens on one speed. Typically what happens is it'll work on every single speed except for high. You just have the opposite.
Yeah, well, it's not the fan at all. It's the selector for where it's going to be blown.
Right.
You know, for AC.
That's
or
cool.
Hot or anything.
Wait a minute. That's called the mode switch. So you're talking about defrost, center vent, and floor?
Yes.
Okay, that's called mode, yeah.
So it wouldn't be a door or an actuator or something in there?
I mean,
because he's saying it's blowing hot, but it's like, is it heater hot or is it just hot air?
Yeah, where's the air coming from? Because if you're recirculating, you're pulling air from inside the car, cooling it off, and putting it right back in the car. So if you go to max air, what does it do on max air?
1 minute.
On max, it blows AC fine. And then when I click it down to regular AC, it starts blowing hot air.
Now, you take it off max and you go to normal?
Right, and it blows hot air then.
Okay. Well, it's got to be a mode problem.
Yeah.
It's got to be something. And the question is there's a door underneath behind the glove box, and it's going to go inside air or outside air, and obviously yours is not doing that. So the question is the signal being sent? Is it being accepted? And is his door moving? So that's the diagnostic process. What part of town do you live in?
I'll take it to Blackwell.
Oh, God.
There, that's where I've been going.
All right.
We're sorry.
Sorry. Don't say that we said there, sent you there, okay? I'm just telling you. Just don't say we sent you there because, sometimes he's an ornery SOB. You know what I mean? He's an ornery one. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Alan Salem, Andy Salem, Mark Salem, we're at your service. Really not willing to try to fix it over the phone. He says, I get a lot of calls, but he says, I'd prefer that they just tell me your make and model and give me the symptoms, and I can give them kind of a menu of what it is that they might be faced with. I'll ask them, does it blow blue smoke, and so, is it black smoke, and so forth and so on. Nevertheless, strictly diesel service and repair. He's a Better Business Bureau A-rated shop. He's got some great technicians, and he's been around a long time. His name is Nate, strictly diesel service and repairs. Bill, good morning. How can we help you this morning?
Yes, I have a 97 Chevy C1500. It's got a manual transmission. I bought it from my father, and he bought it new, and it's pretty much been a lemon ever since he bought it. When he got it, it did not have a tilt steering or cruise control, and they said, well, for $500, you can get cruise control and tilt steering, or for $300, we'll put in an aftermarket cruise control. So that's what he went with to save the $200, and it never worked right. He took it into the shop like 9 times, and he just gave up on getting it fixed. But
so is that the question? Is that what you want to do? Is get the cruise fixed?
Well, I was interested at one point, but right now it's so falling apart that I'm not sure it's even worth thinking about. But most of the problems seem to be electrical. One of the issues is every once in a while it'll go through a rash of push the clutch in, turn the ignition, and all the noises that are supposed to happen before it starts happen, but then nothing comes out of the starter. And
okay, so let me shortcut that real quick for you. I hit the key, I hear a click, but I don't hear the motor turning over.
Right.
Okay, good. Let's go to the next one.
It's been an intermittent problem for over 10 years. I finally figured out that if I hit the steering column or the steering wheel while I'm turning the ignition, that it'll start right up. No problem.
Okay. So what's the question?
Any clue what's going on here? Because I can't repeat what makes this problem. And
okay. Well, I let me comment. First of all, this truck wasn't a giant piece of junk. It's new technology, and when it came out in 1997, we didn't know a whole lot, so we weren't real good at fixing it. So I'm not quite sure I'd label this truck a genuine lemon from the day one. I'd say that the industry, it took a while for us to catch up. Number two, I'm not going to be fixing your car by taking the steering wheel apart. I'm going to hook up different equipment to it that doesn't take but 5 or 10 minutes, and I'm going to watch the voltage to the trigger and the trigger to the starter solenoid, the motor, and I'm going to watch all of that happen, because if you go to my website, marksalem.com, and you go to FAQ 28, which is it doesn't start. It talks about it clicking hard, and no clicking at all when you go to the start position. And then you said you had a manual transmission on this, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay. That also causes, we got a clutch switch on there too. So that clutch switch has to be working, because it's not going to let you start it with it in gear. So this isn't a tough one.
Right.
The diagnostic on this might be half an hour, $60, $70?
Yeah. If you call me and we're talking on the phone right now, the first thing I would tell you to do is if you're certain that everything started with this aftermarket cruise control, we've seen a lot of issues with those, I'd get that out of there. It's probably 5 connections in a box under the dash. Get that thing out of there and go drive it and see how many of your problems are gone, because that's simple.
But as far as the start is concerned, that cruise control box has nothing to do with the starter. It's from the ignition switch through the neutral switch through the clutch switch and then all the way to the trigger on the starter.
Right, well, but
I'm pretty sure it's in this steering column because, as I said, I figured it out too. If it doesn't start, just hit the steering column and it starts right up.
And I'm telling you that you're going in the wrong direction There's an adjustment down at the bottom of the steering column where the ignition switch is at. I'm going to loosen 2 5/16 screws and I'm going to slide that up or down. Taking apart the steering column is not the fix. It's not a good idea to tell your shop how to fix the truck. It's just your idea to tell them exactly what it's doing and ask them to do it. I stand on what I said before. This is a $65 or $75 diagnostic at most any shop I know. And most of the guys that are gray-haired guys are going to probably fix it for $25 more. So you can tell them about your steering column all you want. You can tell them that you hit it and it does it. Another thing you do is push your steering column release, put the steering wheel all the way to the top, and then pull it down hard and see if it makes any difference. And if it does, it's still not a defective steering column. It's still the ignition switch that's bolted to the top of the steering column. It just needs to be adjusted. Mm-hmm. All we're doing is changing that dynamic. Anyway, good luck to you, Bill. Thank you very much. Peter, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. I have a 81 Cutlass Supreme. It used to be a diesel. I just completed the car with a Chevy 383 crate engine with a turbo 700. We had all the new gauges, VDO gauges installed. And I had a half-inch fuel line from the gas tank to the previous 350 Chevy engine. So we kept that. And with the new motor, we put these new gauges. The fuel gauge is reading half full when the tank is totally full.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about your diesel gas gauge problem where the conversion was from gas to or from diesel to gas, and we'll be right back. I think that's 26. I think we're supposed to do 26 or something like that. But nevertheless, I'll fix it when we get done. 35. It's not a problem with anybody there. It's just a problem with me and the buttons that I have to push. And then I got the kids here, and they're making me mad and teasing me.
Andy, you're making us laugh.
Yeah, it makes it a little tough to get going. Okay, real quick, I'm going to tell you real quick about Kurt's auto repair. Kurtz is a good friend of mine, as is all the shop owners that I suggest that you try if you're geographically located close to them. He's at I-17 in Bell Road. He knows what he's doing. Eric is a really good tech. Eric is his number one tech. Kurt's been around the block, and they're not going to sell you stuff that you don't need, and they're not going to tell you you need stuff that you don't need or you're not due for either. But as far as diagnostics are concerned, he's one of the best. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell Road, Kurtz Automotive is a great place for an oil change or to figure out why every time you start your car on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock, you hear a rooster underneath the hood. That's the kind of thing it is. Okay, we're going to go back to Peter. Mm-hmm. Peter has an 81 Cutlass that was a diesel. Now it's gas. He put a 383 Chevrolet in there and a Turbo 700, and he's got a gas gauge problem. Peter, the answer to your question is the gas gauge and the dash, the sending unit in the tank, and the tank have to match. They have to come from all the same vehicle. So you have to order a gas gauge for your Cutlass with a gas motor in it. Then you have to order that gas tank, and you have to order that sending unit. Then you may have to change some wires just with respect to having a yellow wire and a green wire, and you're going to put the green wire on instead of the yellow wire that's on. The only other thing you can do is pull the tank. Have one of your buddies sitting behind the steering wheel, and you sit there and bend the arm on the sending unit until you're happy with what the stroke is. Obviously, the sending unit all the way down is going to show E, and the sending unit all the way up is going to show F. But there's no quick fix, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, good luck, Peter.
Excuse me. One last question. I need an alignment shop for the car.
Okay, what are you trying to fix with the alignment? Tell me what you're saying.
I've got brand new tires that are 255, 45, 17, new wheels, and it's brand new, tires and wheels.
Okay.
So the steering is tilted. It's not straight.
Okay.
Okay. Alan,
the what? The steering wheel's not straight.
Yeah.
Okay. When you put some wider 70, when you go from a 75 to a 40 or 50 or 60, are we always doing alignments, or is there still a horizontal plane on the spindle on the front end of those?
No, the only time we do alignments is if we modify suspension or
height.
Yeah, modify suspension height up or down, change out parts, stuff like that. Or there was wear on the old tires, or there's wear on the current tires.
Okay. So, Peter, if the front tires you took off of there, no matter what size they were, if those had good wear and they only wore the outside edges of both front tires, which is normal wear, the outside edge is slightly more aggressive than the rest of the tire because the tire leans to the right, leans to the left when you're turning. If that's the only wear you had, then you don't need an alignment. But if you want an alignment, just call around and ask everybody. And give me the ballpark. Give me the range for an alignment.
What is it? 99 to 150.
Okay. Yeah. So we think that you're going to be between $100 and $150 at any shop in town that knows their salt. But, again, if you have a small amount of outside edge wear on the two front tires that you took off, regardless of the fact that you put some hot rod tires back on, wider tires back on, the horizontal plane of the spindle will be the same. So good luck to you, Peter. Thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you'd like to call in now, we've got time, and we've got another hour after this one, so we're going to go from 11 to 12 as well. Let me tell you about another good shop, and that's Action Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. You see, a lot of us got started way back in the 70s and the 80s, and we've been friends since then. And I can vouch for the guys that have been around 20 and 30 years, because you're not around 20 or 30 years if you're taking advantage of people and having them write huge checks for work that they don't need to have done. Usually those guys don't last more than 2 or 3 years before they go broke, or before the neighborhood wakes up to the fact that they're selling a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be done. The old gray-haired guys that have been around a long time understand that there's plenty of work out there. We don't have to make up ideas about why you need to have your engine overhauled or whatever. So he's a good guy. I've known him a very long time. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. He's been serving that Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. And Gil, anybody on the wings?
Yes, we have Jack.
Jack, good morning. How can I help you?
I just had a question about they were talking about transmissions. I had a question about this new synthetic transmission fluid they have.
Okay. Let me just tell you the difference, okay? The conventional transmission fluid was a man-made oil, and it had an expected life of about one-third of what the new synthetic is. The new synthetic has much higher temperature tolerance. The old stuff, probably at 230 to 250, turned to a tar. The new stuff is still flowing. Red is red, pretty is pretty, at 500 degrees. Now, there's a lot of your transmission that will never survive a 500 degree internal temperature, but if you get up and you get into the 300 range with the conventional, you're probably going to burn some of your fluid, but with a synthetic, you're not. And the synthetic will continue to protect your transmission, but it also has a longer interval. So the interval's about 100,000 miles.
There's a lot of other questions I have, why you're asking this issue. Are you thinking of switching an old car to a synthetic, or what are you doing?
No, here's my question. I have an 08 V8 Dodge Dakota, and at 80,000 miles, I did a transmission fluid change. I replaced it. But now with this new synthetic transmission fluid, I was wondering if it would be worthwhile or necessary to switch out the transmission fluid with the new synthetic stuff, if that would give me a...
I'm not even sure. Is there even a conventional transmission fluid anymore?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
But I'm not quite sure that there's going to be a big benefit for you to change that now.
No.
I think at the next service would be certainly appropriate. But let me... Do you haul anything behind this truck?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you ever abuse it? Does your wife go out Friday night on Central and drag race or anything like that?
No, she rarely even drives it.
Okay. So I'm quite sure in the absence of you towing a trailer, or if you're going to Flagstaff with a horse trailer, or you're doing the stuff that causes the transmission to run in the 200 to 300 degrees, I'm not quite sure I would suggest that you do that. I think now, when you changed it, did it smell burnt, or was it still rosy?
You know, I don't even know. The mechanic just told me at 80,000 miles a time to do a fluid change. I did my brake fluid, my tranny fluid.
Okay.
I would say save the money.
Good thing.
What'd you say?
I said I would just save the money and stick with the fluid that you're running in it now. I wouldn't change anything.
I agree with Andy. I think it's going to give you a false sense of security. How many miles are on it right now?
110. I did it at 80. So when would be the next tranny fluid change?
Well, I think you should go and default back to your manual. I think your manual is going to have a 30 or a 40 or a 50 or a 60 call. So look at your owner's manual, and I'd stick pretty close to that. I would also think that if you'd pull the stick now and look at it and smell it because you've got new fluid in it, then as long as you can continue to look and smell like that, it's going to be okay. But if I were you, you're probably going to change it again in 40,000 miles plus or minus 10. I'm guessing your manual's going to be 40,000 plus or minus 10. So from 30 to 50 is probably going to be when it's going to be called for.
I'm at 110 now, so say 140,000 miles, say 150.
Yeah.
What do you do, smell for a burnt smell?
You'll know. You'll know. I mean, have you ever smelled a brand new, virgin tranny fluid? I mean, it's very, very red, almost pink, and it smells almost sweet.
It does.
Almost sweet.
Yeah.
If you pull it and it's brown and it's, you will be able to know if it's burnt. There's zero question. I mean, we could teach an ape to do that. So it's real simple.
And we have. His name is Alan.
That's right.
We've taught him how to do that. The idea is you don't have any of the symptoms and you don't have any of the characteristics that we see. Now, keep in mind you've been around the world four times at the equator, 100,000 miles.
Right.
That transmission is not going to live forever. I doubt very seriously if that transmission will still be alive at 150. That's six times around the Earth. But by the same token, having a new transmission put in is starts it over again. You got another 150,000 miles to go. So that'll be a choice that you'll have to make.
And you're going to have some, indications of, starting to fail or having issues before. It's not just going to. Rarely do they just. One day go out.
And what she means is that example, you'll get in the morning, you'll put it in drive, and it'll be a delayed engagement. And it'll do it every time you start it cold, it'll have a delayed engagement. And then it'll all of a sudden surge forward. But during the day, it's fine. Well, those are hard internal seals. Sometimes you stuff it to the floor, and it'll slip before you feel the engine grab a hold or the engine grab a hold of the rear wheels through the transmission. So there'll be symptoms for you. Just you don't ignore them, but no one can promise you that you're going to get 10 more thousand. But my bet is you'll be buying a tranny somewhere around 140, 150. Okay?
I know everybody's going with the synthetic oil, so I was just wondering about the synthetic tranny.
Yeah, I'd say just stick with what you. Yeah, what you're doing.
None of us would do it, and I wouldn't do it on my truck either. I mean, and the synthetic goes a long time. It gives people a false sense of security, so when they look in their manual and say, oh, okay, I can go 100,000 miles with my transmission, that doesn't mean someone shouldn't be pulling the dipstick and smelling it. We shouldn't take a look at it every once in a while in the event that you did haul a boat to Lake Powell one day or one weekend. So it's just a matter of looking at it. That's all. Okay?
Synthetic is a superior product to the previous stuff.
Yeah, but it's also three or four times more money for you, too.
Yeah.
I mean, so if your transmission is going to fail at 50, then why don't you just have it fail in the cheap oil and put the synthetic in the new one?
And it's not going to prevent a failure.
And it's not going to prevent a failure. Thank
you,
Andy.
And it's not going to make you love you more.
And it's not going to make your car love you more either. That's my word.
I know.
Because, and with all due respect to you, Jack, there's lots of people that think that if they give it premium gas or if they put in synthetic oil or if they put nitrogen in their tires, their car's going to love them more. And my suggestion is the car has a brain and it has everything to do with what comes out of the tailpipe, but it doesn't know that you're never going to pass gas in the driver's seat. It doesn't know that. It doesn't know if you're going to abuse it. So, and I'm not talking about your wife either, okay? All right, thank you very much. Good luck to you. We're going to have another hour of fun, so you're welcome to join us. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Sitting next to me is Andy, my daughter. She runs our operation. Alan runs the floor. He runs the mechanical side, the performance side, the diesel side, the motorhome side, the construction equipment side. Is there anything I haven't covered?
The practical jokes.
Yeah.
I do those.
The entertainment.
The entertainment.
Office
I run
entertainment.
That, I run that division. Yeah, I am the president and CEO, and I there's no one as good as me on that. For sure. I am the rule enforcement.
Rule enforcement.
Yeah,
rule
enforcement. Yeah, number one rule breaker.
The number one rule breaker, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you two guys work together real well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, yep. And do you do what she says to do?
Yeah, typically.
Every time?
Hey, it depends on what it is.
Okay.
She told me to go get lunch yesterday. I went and got lunch.
Oh, let's cue the whining. That's the first time in maybe 10 years.
Seriously, if she's not here, I don't eat.
Seriously?
No, I starve.
We were going to Texas one time, and he's like, what am I going to do for lunch? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you feel like? Order food yourself. I think we were on the road in Texas. I said, you know what? I'll do you a solid. I'll call it in for you, but you have to go pick it up.
I'm not even kidding you. This is the God's honest truth. We laugh about this all the time. I know we got not much time, but me and my wife were out to lunch one time, and I think we were at Payway or something,
yeah.
And we get up to the thing, and I'm staring at the menu board. I'm like, she goes, what do you want? And I said, I don't know. Call Andy. I don't know what I can do here.
That is ridiculous.
That is God's honest truth. I don't know.
She's like, hey, what does Alan get from Payway? He doesn't know. I'm like, oh, my. Wow.
That's okay. That's okay. There's probably
that's
a lot
what
of,
I handle at work, people.
Yeah, that's the CEO part of it is ordering right. lunch for my that, brother who right. doesn't know where we're getting. But at least you know what his menu is. And I'm sure it talks about Taco Bell and Jack in the Box and Payway every once in a while. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. You can call us with your car question, and we'll be back right after this. Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is Alan Salem, my son, and Andy Salem Verdugo, and it's my daughter, and the two of them are running our shop because Renee and I are somewhat retired, and I've still got some horses that I've got to deal with, and the kids are doing a great job working at the shop. This show isn't about our shop. It's about your car questions and your car problems. And it's easy to get a hold of us and easy to ask a question. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You start off with, I got this year, make, and model of car, and then give us the symptoms. Tell us what it does this, and we're going to ask you questions. Does it do it hot? Does it do it cold? Does the vibration shake the seat of your pants, or does it shake the steering wheel? The engine miss, is there a check engine light at the same time that the car is running rough? Those are the kind of questions. It's a give and take. I'm a master technician, and I've been an ASE master certified technician since 1991, and I've been a certified ASE technician, not a master, but a technician since 1985. So it took me a while to get my certification, and then to get a master, you have to pass all the tests, and that was in 1991. So, and we fixed a couple hundred thousand cars in our life. In 1988, one of the biggest questions I had was, what's the name of your shop, Mark? And the show isn't about my shop, so I created a list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix. And so I'll tell you about some of them. Automotive Dynamics. It's Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. I've known Chuck since 1982, and his son Derek runs Auto Dynamics. So they're on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. And as far as Mark Salem is concerned, it's by far the best repair shop, honest repair shop, in all of Sun City, and it's called Automotive Dynamics. Let's go to Tony. Tony's been waiting. Thank you for holding, Tony. How can we help you?
Thanks, Mark, for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 95 Ford Bronco, and it's a rear axle question. It's got the 8.8. I need a recommendation on a good shop to bring it into for a noisy rear axle. And
Tell me when the noise is there.
Acceleration, deacceleration, the tone changes. It's got a howl back there. Hit it up on jack stands, spinning it. I've already replaced the rear axles and bearings because one was obviously bad. It was leaking and there was play in it. But now the sound of that, I've eliminated that sound. It's really obvious that there's something wrong in a ring and pinion or...
Have you ever had the ring and pinion changed, or is it the factory ring and pinion?
I think it's factory.
Okay.
And it's a track lock.
Okay. Well, we get those noises after we don't set up a ring and pinion set correctly. where we have to go back and readjust it. I don't know how many miles this thing has on it. Sometimes it just needs adjustment, but it doesn't sound like the teeth are meshing correctly for whatever reason, whether it's come loose or whether they're just worn out. But anytime you get it on XL and D-cell, that's a gear mesh issue. So we just have to take it apart and look at them and maybe put a new ring and pinion in it.
At the worst case, it's ring and pinion. At the best case, you might be able to adjust or shim the rear end. But how many miles are on it?
About 210,000.
Okay.
And what part of town are you in?
Surprise.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think Harker's would be the best shop for you to go to. I know I'm 100% sure they can fix this. They're 38th Avenue and Indian School, so I can't get you right out into Surprise, but I know Harker's can handle this 38th Avenue and Indian School. Between Bob and his sidekick there, they're like Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth put together. They hit home runs all the time. So if I were you, I'd go to them.
Okay, that's what I need.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of adjustment and looking at, you know, patterns on teeth and this and that, and I think that part's over my head.
Yeah. But, see, you've done a great job, unlike most people, and you've done a good job in describing it to us. So when you're feathering the throttle, the noise may not be there, but on throttle or D-cell, you've got the noise. That helps us.
Yeah.
That really helps us. So, yeah,
it's completely gone if you're neutral on it, just almost on a coast.
Yeah.
Then, boy, as soon as you get on it or off it, you get the sound, and it changes depending upon if you're on load or deacceleration.
Yep.
Yeah, those are, like I said, you did a good job in telling us exactly how the heck it sounds. So we do those rear ends ourselves, and we change gear ratios and we do all that kind of stuff. The problem is you're 210,000. My fear would be you'd go in and make the adjustment and it would be okay for 10,000 miles, and then we'd be making more adjustments.
Yeah.
And then we're also quite sure that your 95 Bronco, which in effect is 25, 26 years old, at 210,000 miles, which is four times around the girth of the earth, it might – five times.
Eight times.
Yep,
you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. See, I'm looking at numbers and I can't.
That's right.
Eight times around the earth, so a ring and pinion set and a set of bearings wouldn't be a bad idea.
No, not at all.
So, well, all right, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
One more question. Can they do that with the axle in the vehicle?
You mean the differential?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We don't pull differentials out to do that.
Yeah, well, we're going to take the axles out the side. We're going to pull the third member or open up the third member or pull the cover. I don't know which one the differential
cover, yeah.
But we're going to deal with it. We're not going to take it loose from the springs.
No.
We're going to do all of our work either in the front of the housing or in the back of the housing, one or the other.
Great. Thank you so much for the recommendation.
Okay.
I'll check with Harker's.
You bet. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Gil, we're still waiting for callers?
Nope. Okay. Just got one.
We have one. His name is Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. You know, on synthetic transmission fluid, for a 2014 GMC with a 5.3, you know, it's Dexron 6, you know, is the factory fluid. Do you think there's an advantage to using, like, AMSOIL signature transmission fluid? Because they say it goes longer between flushes.
I'm laughing at you. I'm laughing at these two because they're rolling their eyes. They know what my answer is going to be. There's no such thing as an AMSOIL factory. It's like engine oil. Just there's four or five people that make engine oil, and it goes in 20 or 30 different kinds of containers. So the answer to your question is you could use either one, but there is no benefit. And if we thought for a minute that AMSOIL or Perkins or any of these other way out there, heavy marketed, if you put this in, you'll never have another problem. If we really thought that was the case, we'd be selling it, and we don't. So I don't remember exactly the four companies that make oil, but Chevron, Phillips 66,
Chevron makes Phillips.
Okay.
Phillips is part of Chevron.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Shell, Mobil, Chevron, and one more.
Yeah.
Those are the four major oil companies, and I can't remember the other one. There's four major oil companies that makes everybody's oil, and so it's just something that came out of somebody else's.
Now, don't mistake us. We there are people out there, including some of our, you know, one of our employees here that, that swears by that stuff. It's just, you know, for us, I think the better question is do any of us use it in our cars? And the answer is no. I mean, I don't know. We just don't for the expense and the, you know, I don't want to say it's hard to get, but you can't just, you know, go down to Checker and buy it or whatever, or wherever. But, we don't use it, but there are people that just swear by it.
It's no different than Avon. When my mother was young, when we were young kids, my mother did Avon because it was a premium makeup for women, and it made them look prettier, made her faces last longer, and all this other stuff. And today, Avon doesn't, I don't even know if it ever even appears anymore.
Sure.
Andy, do you know?
I don't know. Okay. I'm sure it's still around.
What are you looking at me for?
Because I was going to say to
when's
you, but
the last
then you're,
time you ordered Avon?
Yeah,
I do have nice skin. Though.
Yeah, you do.
Jesus. There's it's just a marketing thing where people can create the perception that if you want the very best, then you buy our product. And I'm not a believer in that kind of stuff. We have people like that walk in our door once a month with a product that's better than anything else.
Yeah.
We had a guy walk in here with a spark plug not too long ago, and we'd never seen or heard of it, but it outperformed everything there. But the guy's driving a car that's 17 years old, and it's leaking oil in the parking lot. So I'm not going to really trust him to tell me that I need to change all my spark plugs. By the way, what spark plug are we selling?
That's a good question for.
It depends. There's a lot of applications.
Of,
yeah, it's application specific, but I know that I know Denso's a big one. Mm-hmm. I think we still do some Champions on some of the older stuff.
We do. NGK, we're doing some NGK.
Yeah, NGK. Yeah, it just depends. But
it's up to us to pick the spark plug for your car. Your best, if you bring your car for a tune up, let us pick the spark plug because we're going to put the spark plug in your car that we feel is going to provide the best.
Which one makes your car love you the most?
Yeah,
well,
which one?
Yeah, manufacturer.
And the manufacturer to some extent.
There are some. We ran into one a while back. I can't think of what it was, but there are some cars that just like some spark plugs better. And I want to say it was an NGK. We ended up having some issues, and it was and we ended up putting NGKs in it, which is what the factory called for. And it just, whatever, it fixed the issue, whatever the issue was. I don't remember, but.
But in your life in the business, how long is it? How many times has that happened?
No.
And I could say the same thing. There were times where we used a specific power steering fluid that for whatever reason made the howl go away.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why it's...
There's definitely those quirks, I think, for different vehicles or different issues, but it's not...
It's not something that we live our life around.
It doesn't happen every day. It's kind of just an oddball thing.
And we have allegiance to our oil rep. We're Chevron people. So our oil is from Chevron, and we trust that the power steering and the transmission fluid and the engine oils and all that kind of stuff that they have are going to suit our purpose.
Sure.
And frankly, since 1988... when we were with Mobil, and then we went to with Valvoline in 1985, we've really never had an oil-related problem. It is true that there has been times people will blame it on the oil, but that's easy enough to fix. The guy says, I told you not to use Valvoline in my car, and my motor blew up. He brings it in, and the rod bearing is broken. The crankshaft is snapped in half, and the rod's hanging through the side of the block, and he's got this high-performance engine underneath his car. Mm-hmm. So
the only time we see engines fail from, an oil issue is when there's none in. That's really the only time.
I say to people, 99.9% of the engines we replace have been overheated or run low on oil, and it's the 100% of the cause of the person with their hands on the steering wheel. And then a lady called, and she said, my husband blew the motor up, but it's my car. And I said, like I said, it's the guy with his hands on the steering wheel.
Yep. Well, and that's another reason why I don't know that the intervals being extended are also a great thing, because, you know, if you're not going a year without having your vehicle looked over, because most of the time people look over their vehicles at the oil change service, then, you know, you can be running your tires low, your fluids could be low, all sorts of things, and you're not paying attention to them.
You're right. Yeah, oil change is oil, lube, and filter, and then check all the fluids, the tires, the belts, and the hoses, and look for obvious oil leaks and other concerns that will probably raise their head before the next oil change is there. So you're right. They're that inspection. We do have some people from the Mountain Park Ranch area and the Ahwatukee area that are in that category that you talk about that'll bring it in and just have us just give it a check over. Just yeah. lift it up, look at it, and make sure that it's going to go another 3,000 miles.
Sure.
And the peace of mind is worth it.
Yeah.
And, of course, those are people that have been with us a long time. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. When it comes to car repair shops, let me tell you about the only one in Mesa that I can put my name behind and say it's a great place. They're honest. They're dependable. They've been around the block a few times. It's a younger couple. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. It's the only place in Mesa that's been able to pass the muster and pass all the tests that it takes to be on my list where I refer people to you. Obviously, it's important to me to get the best shops, and in Mesa, I'm sorry, the closest and the best one happens to be Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street, just east of Stapley. Mike, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Mark. Just a question about two different vehicles. First one is a 97 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and when it's in drive and you try to start moving in drive, it's hardly does anything, very, very sluggish. If you start out in second gear and once you're moving, put it into drive, then it seems to work fine.
Okay. Well, if you manually shift it all the way down to first, can you go, you know, can you shift from first to second, second to third?
Yeah.
And so then it sounds as though you're missing first gear, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
How many miles are on it?
150,000.
What did we tell you earlier? We said here, transmissions are 150,000.
Yeah.
She sounds like she wet the bed.
Wait, hold on. Go ahead. What did you say?
I was wondering if it could be something like a modulator or a dirty filter. Or...
No. Does it do 60, 70 miles an hour in high gear?
Yep.
Okay, it's not the filter that's plugged.
You know, it could be something, and I'm not a training person. None of us are here, but in some rare cases, yes, you get some buildup or something, and there's solenoids in the transmission that will work back and forth. Could it be that? Yes. Finding someone who's going to go in there and just do a solenoid when a transmission, you know, maybe on its last leg is going to be a little bit different story. But sure, it could be something like that. But you won't know that until you have someone actually tear it apart and look at it.
And the risk, I mean, why somebody wouldn't do it is because the risk is so big. And really, they're looking out for your best interest in the big picture.
Why don't you just roughhouse it, okay? Just put it down in first gear after it's warmed up. And take it up into the higher speeds and shift it to second, shift it up all the way up to the drive and overdrive. And then when you're coming down, then I want you to downshift to first gear. And let's exercise the shift range and let's see if low will come back. If low doesn't come back, then I think you're probably better be looking for how much are you going to charge me to take my transmission out and either replace it with a used or a rebuilt one or rebuild mine? That's the question.
Yeah.
Okay, doke.
He's got one other question on another car.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, that's not likely a torque converter issue, would it be?
No, you said it would do 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. The torque converter, we need that to lock up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, the other vehicle is it's a 1948 Jeep Willys station wagon, but it's got a 1965 327 Chevy engine.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what's all inside the engine, but I know that there's oversized valves in the heads and a Holley intake manifold and a Holley 600 CM carburetor. I just want to know, I mean, I got it running and it seems to run good, but I want a performance tuning, just to make sure the carburetor and the timing's tweaked good.
What part of town you live in?
On the west side, Peoria, Sun City.
I'm going to send you to Harker's.
Yeah.
They get with carbs?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is what I'm thinking of. Bob and Mark and Eddie, all three of us could take that thing and just fine-tune it and put the idle on the edge of a razor blade. We could get him all wide-open throttle. We can get the distributor to rattle a little bit on the top end of the RPM range. We've been there, done that. We've built these motors.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at the vacuum and all that kind of stuff. So the answer is there's a lot of us old guys. We're down in Tempe. We're too far away for you. But if you go to Harker's and you say, Mark Salem said that you're going to be able to align the fuel delivery, the timing, the EGR valve, all that kind of stuff, and to give me the best of all the worlds, how much is that going to cost you? Alan, what would you say? Andy, what would you say?
I'd probably say $300 to $400.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. I'm going to say 400 is a little tall for me, but I was going to say 300, 300, give or take 50.
Yeah.
But there's no parts in there. We're talking about dial-in, not Holley.
We're assuming the carburetor's okay.
Power valves and making sure the float levels are good and setting the timing, setting the air fuel mixture, setting the main jets, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just synchronizing
it's
everything.
It's 2.5 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. TOT Harkers is what I would say. Okay.
Harkers, and that's in
38th Avenue and Indian School.
Okay.
Larry Harker's Auto Repair.
Larry Harker's.
What is TOT?
Turned over to.
Oh, okay.
That's police talk, okay?
Okay.
All right.
10-4,
right.
Let's go.
All right.
10-4, good buddy.
Mark to Mario over.
Yeah.
Mark to Mario over.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, well, I got to start off with a comment. My wife said I should call you for fixing her AC on her car. So I'm going to thank you for fixing her AC on her car.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. Yeah. What did she have a contact? Who did she have contact with in our organization?
Well, I called you about a problem with an air conditioner, and I wasn't getting cold air out of it. And you told me that I wasn't, or it sounded like to you that I didn't pull enough of a vacuum on it to clear out the air and whatever had in there.
Okay.
So, anyways. I got that over with.
Okay.
Now I feel better.
Good.
The second is, my car calls for five-weight oil, and I'm seeing that, you know, some people are recommending going to a zero-weight oil for my car. Should I stick with the five-weight oil?
Well, let me just explain something to you. Huh? If we have two pieces of metal that are rubbing against one another and the oil's supposed to get in there, lubricate, and get the hell out and carry the heat with it and the trash, okay?
Okay.
Do we want peanut butter or do we want water?
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference.
Okay.
I want to tell you something. This is something you guys know, that you're giving me a barrel of 020 synthetic on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We are selling the heck out of the low viscosity synthetic oils, and they are so premium to everything that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead.
That's all late model stuff.
Admittedly.
Yeah, that's all late model stuff. If your car calls for a 530 or 520, I would run a 530. I would not spend the extra money and go to a zero weight.
And it's a money issue. They both provide your protection appropriately, but I agree with him. The money issue is going to be a difference. It's going to be a third to a half more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you should be going with what the manufacturer recommends.
2 minutes.
Okay.
These new cars are coming with such tight tolerances, and they're squeezing every single thing they can for fuel economy and weight to horsepower and all this kind of stuff that they need an oil that's more advanced from what your car is calling for.
Okay, gotcha. I have a funny story if I got time to tell it.
You know what?
We'll listen, but we're going to have to break here.
Yeah,
about.
I got a minute and a half, but you go ahead. Minute and a half. Go ahead.
Okay, it's real quick. My wife worked at an auto parts store, and she said this guy was pulling these cans of oil out and getting to the back of the oil, and she says, I don't know the guy's name is, but I'm going to use Mark. Anyway, says, what are you doing, Mark? He says, I know you guys put the freshest oil in the back of the shell. And she says, for God's sake, Mark, that oil is a million years old.
Freshest oil.
I want to tell you something. What's our containers in the back?
1 minute.
300 gallons?
375.
300. We have six. If I'm gonna, six 375 gallon containers in the back that have all the lubes that we squirt into cars. And I promise you, when your wife brings her car in, Mario, it's going to get fresh oil. We're going through that oil like there's no tomorrow. And so, and besides that, every night we have this little elf in there. He stirs it all up to make sure
that
the old...
I do that at the grocery store.
What?
Well, that's going to make her feel a lot better.
Yeah. Andy, what did you say?
I do that at the grocery store.
You do what?
That's different. Oil's a million years old coming out of the earth.
I know.
You're admitting that you go to the reach to the back of the shelf?
Of course. You get the milk from the very back. You get the bread from the very back. Yeah.
That's Andy. the penny pinching lady.
No,
that
it's
runs.
Not about penny pinching. It's you get the freshest stuff in the back.
Okay, well, we're going to leave the milk alone, and we'll be back right after this. $11.33. Mark Salem here with Alan and Andy, my son and my daughter, who've been in the business for How many years? I always mess it up. When did you first
plus,
start?
Yeah.
20 plus years. Both of them 20 plus years. Andy signs the front of the paycheck. Alan signs the back of the paycheck. Alan runs the shop, and Andy runs Alan. So between the whole circle of friends, it works out really well. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. I've known Phil since 1968. He's a good guy. He knows transmissions, and the transition from the two-speed Power Glides, three-speed C4s and C6s, to the new electronics has been easy, and here's why. All we're doing is we're shifting it differently. Where before we shifted it with throttle angle and pressure, now we use electronics. But in fact, the transmissions basically work the same. We're just shifting them differently. So if you need a transmission problem looked at, or if you have a leak you need, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. It's been around a very long time, and it's a good transmission shop for you to visit with. Kevin, good morning, and thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Yes, this has to do with synthetic oil and filter. My girlfriend, she has a 2011 300 Mercedes, and she's been taking it to a place, and when she told me that every 3,500 miles, they're asking her to come in to get, you know, the oil change, the synthetic, and I'm like, that just doesn't sound right. So
she's probably cute.
I think the last time when she takes it, and I asked the guy, I'm off, why are you getting this vehicle in at, you know, 3,000 miles, 3,500 miles, and it's only got 80,000 miles on it? He's all, oh, the filters don't last up to very long. I'm like, well, how long does a filter last? He's all, oh, about 3,000 miles. That's why we need her to come in. I'm like, now I pulled that car out, and I said there's got to be a better way.
Well, let me tell you the fact of the matter is this is going on a lot. A friend of mine who is a retired police chief took his car in for its service. They did a premium oil change, and they put a 3,000-mile call on the sticker. Now, conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic is 5 to 7,500 miles, and a full synthetic
that's
starts at about 10,000 and goes to your Mercedes to 15,000. So your girlfriend is probably pretty good looking. Your girlfriend is gullible. You need to get that car out of that shop, and you need to go find somebody else that plays the game like it's supposed to be played.
Yeah,
and I want to tell you something. Hold on. It's flat BS about the filter not being able to handle that. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie.
Now.
Okay, now. Go.
In everything you said is correct. However, the filter is why we change the oil, because in a perfect world, oil will last forever. Mm-hmm. It gets contaminated, which is what the filter filters out.
Right.
So they don't wear out. I mean, they don't get full. But the reason that we do change the oil is because the filter does fill up with debris from filtering out the oil.
And we lose the properties within.
Yeah.
So the viscosity enhancers and the detergents wear out.
Right.
So the oil loses its property. But here, let me ask you this question. This is a tough one.
Okay.
Andy knows the answer, so I'm going to ask you. How do you know when the filter's plugged?
It goes into bypass.
How do you know when it goes into bypass?
I don't know the answer. I don't know.
That's the answer. No one knows.
Oh, okay.
No one knows.
I'll tell you, in fairness, our AMSOIL guy here at the shop, you know, again, we already had this AMSOIL discussion, but he's got 400, this is God's honest truth, he's got 400,000 miles on an Explorer, and he can correct me if I'm wrong. He changes the filter every 10,000 miles, and he's never changed the oil.
And that's not something we would suggest that you do on your brand new $40,000 car.
I wouldn't do it on my go-kart. I wouldn't.
Well, you know what? I have a 92 Toyota that I bought new that I still drive. 350,000, never opened the motor, and I got over 100,000 on the clutch.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do something right there.
I'm not suggesting, nor would I ever suggest that to anybody under any circumstances. He's gotten lucky.
And he's hit his head a few times.
Yeah, he's gotten lucky.
And he's been with us 30-some-odd years, and he's really a good tech. Uh-huh. But there's certain – well, we have other techs that use bad words worse than Andy, and we don't
yeah.
we deal with that. And we have some of them that smoke and some of them drink. It's okay. But he just has this AMSOIL world around him, and we're not going to disrespect him, but he's successful with it.
Yeah, you did the right thing by not having her go back.
That's it. That's it, right thing. Okay.
Well, here's the problem. I'm at work, and I work in Payson, so I don't get to see her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She's there right now.
At
she went back.
Get a new girlfriend. I'm just kidding. I'm just
it's
kidding.
It's time to get a new damn girlfriend.
I didn't have the answers for her not to go back.
Wait a minute. She's going to a shop in Payson?
No, down here, I think.
No, he's up there. I work in Payson.
Okay.
So I can't be there where she's at. She had an appointment today, and I'm like, ah.
All right, give me don't say the name of the shop. Give me the general location of where the shop is at.
Power Road and University.
Okay.
And it's a...
Don't say anymore.
Stop.
We don't badmouth people.
There's too many people in that area that I was scared you were going there. Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street in Stapley, and they're going to play the game right. They're going to do what's right, and that's where I would take your wife's car. And besides, there's a lady that runs that operation, Thelma. And Brian works the shop, and Thelma runs Brian, just like all the ladies do in our world. Anyway, I got to run, but thank you very much. Hector, you're up next. How can I help you, Hector?
Good morning. My father has a 2008 350 Mercedes.
Okay.
He took it to a shop. They stated he needed to refill the air conditioning because it blows cold on one side and kind of warm on the other. Mm-hmm. He insists on doing it himself. He's very stubborn. I've done it to where I've evacuated the system and done it with a little scale and all that other stuff, but he just wants to put in the little gauges that you use for air conditioning and then just fill it. So I was just like, I don't even know if that's – I'm not going to act like I'm a mechanic and know how to do it. Those little gauges, I mean, are they easy to read to where he could just connect it and it'll tell him how much is in there?
No, in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, we pretended like we'd look at the gauges and we'd all say, oh, that's it. That's the sweet spot. None of us knew our ass from a hole in the ground back then. We just didn't understand. Today we have computers, and the computer goes, sucks it all out, weighs it, cleans it, and puts it back in, and then it says, Mark, I need another 3.75 ounces for this to be completely full. I push the button and say, yes, Homer, and Homer puts in 3.75, and the thing blows ice cubes. And we just clean up your refrigerant and put it right back in your car, and if it's contaminated, then we deal with that. But today, it's not. There's no such thing as a 70 or a $39.95 plus Freon. We're talking $200?
Yeah, I mean, depending on what Freon he's got in there. I don't know.
And how much you're going to have that you need and all that other kind of stuff. So there is no sophisticated way with gauges or temperature guns or any other way to determine if that thing holds 31 ounces for you to get close. And I've been doing this since the 70s. I started in a gas station in 68, and I went through that gauge time where we all pretended we knew what was going on. But it has to do with how much air is going across the condenser, how fast the car is going down the road. Because everybody knows that it gets colder. The air conditioning works better when you're going 50 miles an hour than when you're idling at a traffic light. So the answer to your question is you're going to be overfilled or underfilled, and the symptoms are the same, and you're not going to know which one it is. So if you think you're overfilled and you let it out and you're really underfilled, then you're just compounding the problem.
It's just so much easier to have a shop do it for you. It just really is to spend the money.
If you quoted him, what would you quote him?
If it's 134, I would say probably 250 to 300 maybe, depending on how low it is.
And that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
It's going to be less than that depending on how much we pull out.
Sure.
And it's not a mixture of 12 and 134.
Yeah.
And if it has any kind of metal or any kind of stop leak in it, we're going to stop right there because it'll ruin our machine.
And that's the problem. If you put anything in it that has a stop leak in it, a lot of the shops then can't even work on the vehicle because of the stop leak, because it can ruin our machine. So you're really limiting yourself if you try and tackle it yourself.
And we also add dye when we do that, because in a perfect world, Freon doesn't run out. It's not like gas. It doesn't. In a perfect world, it would last forever if the system stays sealed. So if it's low, it's leaking somewhere, and by adding dye in the future when it begins to blow warm again, we can find it pretty quickly.
And that saves you a lot of money. Got to run, but thank you very much. And Jeff, stay right there. We'll be back and get you in just a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 12, and we're talking about cars. And you can also go to our website, marksalem.com, look at our FAQs. Our FAQs over the last 30 years have been created and written about questions on the radio. We started radio in 1988 in the Valley. And so we're still on the air. We're here every day, every Saturday for 2 hours here on KKNT 960 AM. And the FAQs on our website like I say, are a derivative of all the calls that we've had. So we appreciate you spending your Saturday with us, but right now we're going to go back to the lines. And Hector had a quick follow-up. Hector, I'm all ears.
Yeah, sorry to bug you about this again. Okay. I just need to know, what should I tell my father if he connects the little air conditioning gauges to the, I guess, the low or the high end, whichever one you can. Can he realistically say this is how much Freon is in the system? So if he heard it from you, he'll know yes or no.
Okay, but here's the thing is you really need to be going down the road. We need to bring the idle up. We need airflow across the condenser in order to test the operation. And so, I mean, if he wants to put his gauges on the car and then go drive down the road at 50 miles an hour, that will help. But I can't get within a pound one way or the other of guessing. I'm going to look at the center vent temperature, and I'm going to say below 40 is good. So if he wants to check his Freon level, the best way to do it is go buy one of those stupid little thermometers, stick it in the center vent, go to maximum, and go to speed 3. Not speed 4, but speed 3. Let's run a little slow air across it. And if he's anywhere near 40 degrees as he's driving down the road, I don't care what the temperature of the day is, he's doing good.
But with those gauges, I mean, essentially, no, he cannot. He cannot get that information with the gauges.
He can't. He can have high highs and low lows, and he can vice versa, and tell him, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not the best guy in town, but I'm one of the best guys. Okay, thank you.
We can stand there and look cool, but pretend like we do.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah. Hey, Hector, if you want, you can send me $100 and I'll tell him anything you want.
Yeah, right.
I'll tell him whatever you wanted me to tell him.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's go talk to Jeff. Jeff, how can we help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2020 Dodge Ram 1500. Now, I have not had an American pickup or vehicle for probably 25 years. When I turn it off and walk away, occasionally I will hear a whistling sound. Is that something I need to take to the shop? Is that just the way it is?
No, it's just, is there any pretty girls around there? Because those Dodges have a bad habit of just whistling at the girls.
Just my wife of 33 years.
So oh, well,
good job.
That's it. You tell them Mark Salem said the truck's just whistling at her. No, the answer is we got all kinds of things that are the Freon level in your air conditioning system is going to equalize. You might hear that. We might have some. And I'll tell you where I think you're going to hear that noise from, in the area of the passenger side front seat in the glove box area.
It is.
Bingo.
It's no harm. It's just a whistle. Perfect. Yep. Okay.
All right. Listen, Hold on. You're going to tell her that Salem said that new Ram is whistling at her. Okay.
I will.
Right.
Now, I do have another question for you, if I could.
Okay, go.
Motorhome.
Okay.
30, because I know you have motorhomes and you deal with motorhomes. 28 to 32 feet, is it better to have a gas or a diesel, or does it really matter?
I've had both, and I don't care.
Right.
I've had the 460 okay. Ford. I think the chassis is more important, and don't tell anybody I said this, okay? But the best chassis right. out there right now is the Ford. I hate to say that, but I'm looking at motorhomes myself right now. But I think if you get a Ford chassis, and if you get the 460, some derivative of the 460, or that size of motor, and you get an electronic transmission, I think that you're hitting a home run. But we do work on a lot of motorhomes, but the old Chevy chassis and some of the old half-breed chassis are tough kind of to work on. But at the bottom line is I think the Ford chassis, as much as that pains me to say that, most of my successful motorhomes have been Ford chassis.
That was all a lie. Get a diesel. Don't take that advice. Get a diesel. Stop.
Gets a diesel, what's he going to get? Which one? Which motor is he going to get?
Well, the first thing I would do is what years are you looking at?
So I currently have a 2017 38 foot gas with the Triton V10, and it's just too big for us.
Okay.
So we want to get something smaller. I've driven as large as a Prevost.
Okay.
And when something goes wrong, it costs the farm.
Sure does.
So I'm looking for something that's 2 to 3 years old in that 28 to 30 foot, 32 foot range because my wife can drive it then.
Okay.
You?
All right. The only
Which one? You're going to put him in a Ford, a General Motors, or a Dodge, Chess?
No, I mean, I would put him in a Dodge. The problem is that what we're seeing now is 99% of the problems with this stuff is all this emissions BS that they have. And so, but on the flip side of that same coin, those are for people who take 2 mile trips, 2 mile trips, 3 mile trips, 4 mile trips, you know. In a motorhome, you're not doing that. So, you know, your long distances, it gives it time to regen. You're going to have to deal with the death. But the first time you're climbing up that hill and a 67 Volkswagen passes you in that gas one, you're going to be pissed. Okay? I promise you.
And wait a minute. Let me clean up what he's saying. Both of us own Dodges. Okay? I've got the 67. He's got the 67. There's been times we can't decide on who can outrun who, and it depends on the mile per hour. We are both Dodge guys. We build heavy-duty Dodges. We work on Dodges, but we work on the 6.6, the General Motors Duramax. We work on all of the – we love the 6.7 Ford.
Yeah.
And so when you got the 6.7 Ford, the 6.7 diesel Dodge, and then you got the the V8 on the GM side, wouldn't you agree, Alan, that all of those are good motors?
Yes. I mean, if I had all three of them, I would take the Dodge. But, yes, absolutely. Any of those three, and they're all going to have the emission stuff.
And they're easy to work on. They got good trannies in them. They got good suspension in them, and find somebody that does motorhome work, and they can do the refrigerator and all that other kind of crap as well.
And you could take it to pretty much any diesel mechanic. You know, that Prevost, you probably got an 8.3 Cummins or an 8.9 Cummins or something like that. Yeah. And that's a very specialized unit there. But these, you know, we work on them all the time.
All right, let me tell you what I am looking at. I want you to look at the Renegade. Have you seen one of those?
Yes, but I haven't looked closely. Okay.
I'm looking at a Renegade, and here's the reason. There's something, a DD16. A DD16 is a Detroit diesel with 600 horsepower.
16 liter.
And it's a monster, and it comes with an Allison transmission, which is one of the best trannies out there for motorhomes. So when you start talking about a Detroit 16 liter and you put an Allison behind it, I'm talking about something that excites me.
It accelerates up 8% grades.
I could tow my truck with that.
Yeah. Oh, you can tow 10 trucks with that.
It is a very expensive motorhome. Renee and I are in retirement mode, and she likes to go junking, and I'm happy to be her handyman.
Happy.
Happy
to be her.
I'm happy.
Another good answer.
Please. Can't tell you how many plane flights home there have been from Texas.
Motorhome trips.
Yeah, Florida. Hey, I'm coming back. Where's Dad? He's still in Florida. Okay.
That's one of those trips.
I love it. No.
I am excited to go.
No, I will tell you. There is something with my mom in directions. I mean to tell you, she can't read a GPS.
She holds a map like a lazy Susan.
in fairness to my dad. How do you not read a map? And on top of that, how do you not read a phone? I mean, the big green arrow that says go right in 500 feet. I mean, seriously, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, well, mom's defense.
Go ahead. Do it.
Mom's defense. He's not always the most patient. I want to know, but I'm turning down.
Listen, after 15 wrong turns, I'd be pissed too. Okay?
You'd both be pissed after one wrong turn.
The real problem is I'm doing 70 miles an hour, and I'm waiting for her,
and
she says,
on the brakes.
Oh, you should have turned right there. And then we get downtown, wherever that stupid, that silo?
Magnolia.
I've got a motorhome with 30-foot of trailer, and she's got me on a cul-de-sac.
And you're happy to take her on these junking tours, people. That's what it sounds like.
The motorhome's big enough to haul the junk. I'm not taking no trailer. But it is true. Mrs. Salem is a little bit deficient in the. But there is no amount of computers. I could wrap her in 360.
Why don't you guys invest in a GPS that just talks to you and tells you where to go? In 500 feet, you're going to turn right.
Because somehow she will screw it up.
Okay? She won't even need to talk.
Here's the problem. Someone has to enter the data correctly.
Oh, gosh. Come on.
Okay? Somebody has to put
you
down
do
the
it.
Address. I'm driving. I got to clean the poop tank. I got to cook. I got to do this.
Cook.
You haven't even cooked mac and cheese.
You don't even know how to use a microwave.
Siri cook.
Listen, all I need to do is drive and be wear my chauffeur's hat to get her where she wants to go.
Oh, yeah.
And then she goes into Magnolia and she calls and she says, is there any place we can rent a bigger trailer? I said, we don't even have a trailer. I know, but we're going to need one when I'm done. Anyway, thanks for laughing at this, Hector, but, you know, I think we've given you the answers you need. You won't be disappointed with the diesel.
You give, and then some, so thank you.
All righty, thank you, Hector.
Now he knows how motorhome trips are.
Okay, but and let me just, you can tell, we've been motorhoming since about 1980. And you kids have been every east and west highway from 10 to 90, just coast to coast, and every north and south highway from 1 to 95. Mm-hmm. And every summer we would take off, and Renee and I would leave the shop in capable hands, and we would go motorhoming. So you kids have seen a lot of stuff, and now we're starting to take the grandkids.
Yeah.
And so I have lots of miles. We've had Winnebagos, we've had Fords, we've had Dodges, we've had Chevrolet chassis, we've had them all.
Yeah.
We've had breakdowns, we've had all kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell people with motorhomes, take your house and shake it for 10,000 miles. And see what happens.
Yeah, no, some of our greatest memories are trips like that. So we laugh because it's
well, tell
funny,
me which one hits me itch in the eye right now.
Oh my god.
The dog walking through the tar.
Or the dog.
Okay, hold on.
The guy in the bath slippers.
Okay. We're on our way out of Alaska, and we stop to let the dogs go to the bathroom, and one of them walks through fresh tar. I put him in the bathtub, which takes the tar all over the bathtub, and I mistakenly think that a can of carburetor cleaner will remove the tar. Well, it does remove the tar, but the dog bit me and almost took my finger off, which then made us stop at some place to have my finger bandaged up or stitched or whatever. So, yes, we've had some calamities.
Oh, we've had so many stories.
We've had a lot, but we can still laugh about them.
Oh, yeah. It's been great.
Alrighty. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com is my email address. mark@marksalem.com. And motorhomes is one of my favorite subjects. Mm-hmm. I love to talk about motorhomes and microwaves and all that kind of
cooking.
Stuff. Cooking.
Not using microwaves.
Fixing microwaves.
Hey, I use it good if it says coffee. I push the coffee button. I know how to do that. That's it. Oh, you guys make fun of me.
Microwaves make coffee.
Who makes coffee in the microwave?
Hey, by the way, hey, what kind of trailer do you have for sale right now?
What?
What's that trailer you have for sale?
A Jayco.
A Jayco. How long is it?
A 22 feet.
Foot. Yeah.
22-foot Jayco, two-axle we've got for sale. mark@marksalem.com if you're looking for one. This is one that I personally put back together and made right.